Radio. Audio. Radio.
Gracie,
Sarah,
and Josie
from the Girl Scout Troop 1819, Coxsackie, Athens,
and you're listening to
WGXC
ACRA at 90.7 FM.
Keep on being you.
On Saturday, July 24th, there's an open house at Time and Space Limited. It's celebrating the 10th anniversary of the wedding of TSL's leaders Linda Musman and Claudia Bruce. There will be cake and more from 1 to 3 p.m. at Time and Space Limited, 434 Columbia Street in Hudson, for the open house at Time and Space Limited, Saturday, July 24th.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and Southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable, all the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Ruby's Hotel and Restaurant in Freehold, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
The movie Summer of Soul, or When the Revolution Could Not Be Televised, is being shown at the Crandall Theater in Chatham, July 29th through July 31st. This is one of many events on the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org, where you can find out all sorts of things to do, and you can even add your own event and have it read on the radio by pressing the Add an Event button on the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org, and see events such as Summer of Soul, the film of the music festival from 1969, is on screen at the Crandall Theater July 29th through July 31st in Chatham.
You are listening to Transmission Arts Programming on WGXC 90.7 FM.
On Race Talk for this Tuesday evening. I'm so glad to have you today. And one of the things that we are excited about today is that I have my co-host in the house. That's Randall Martin, and you know him from Tuesday's afternoon shows on WGXC. And I also have a fabulous guest. His name is Devin Irwin, and he will be on first to chat a little bit about what's happening in sports this summer. It's heating up. I mean, we're experiencing 80-degree temperatures, but it's also heating up in the area of sports. Of course, we know this summer is the Olympics, and we are celebrating we're going to see the 2020 Olympics taking place this summer, this July. In fact, I think of just a few weeks from now, and we have issues that have come up with whether or not players should be able to go to the Olympics if they have tested positive for drugs that are no longer, at least not in the United States, no longer a problem, or I should say no longer illegal. And we have a talented young person who is a spelling bee champ, and we're going to talk about her because she's the first African American spelling bee champ. And I can't say that I can pronounce her name correctly, but that would be Zyla Avant. So I'm going to start us off today, this evening, with Devin Irwin. Devin, please tell my audience members, our local listeners, who you are, where you're from, and something about you that you would love them to know.
Hey, everyone. My name is Devin Irwin. I am from Albany, New York. I am an ex-professional basketball player. I used to travel the world and put on shows for kids and their parents, I have to say.
Excellent. Now, you said you were an ex-professional basketball player, but once a basketball player, always a basketball player. You're still pretty much in the mix. You still play, don't you?
Myself here and there, but mainly just trying to get back to the community and help other kids out.
Well, that's great. That's why you're actually on the show today. First, I wanted to invite some Hudsonians who received an MBK scholarship fund, fellowship, I should say. And MBK is my brother's keepers, because it's really important that we see that sports enthusiasts and athletes are still really supported in their academics and social areas. And especially when it comes to young Black men, which is what the MBK program really talks about. So though we couldn't have an MBK young man here today, unfortunately, we do want to, you know, showcase that there are programs out and about in an area that really do help young Black men in their academics. So can you just say a little bit about the program that you are supporter of, and how does it help young people, if not just young Black people? Because of course we have women now who are owning the basketball field, the basketball court, I should say, who also could use some support in that way too. So the question, Devin, is what is being offered in your neck of the woods for young kids?
Well, me myself, we have a nonprofit organization up here in Albany. It's called Fourth Family Incorporated. We empower young kids in the community, the diverse community, to go out and pursue their dreams, and nothing can hold you back. We host camps every year. We give out scholarships to these camps. We help kids get into school. We help these kids get into sports camps. Some kids are unprivileged, and their parents can't pay for these camps. So we raise money for these kids to go to these camps, so they actually have an opportunity to maybe go to a camp with, like, maybe I did it back in the day when I was a kid.
Now, you mentioned that you were a professional basketball player. First, I should let everyone know in the audience that his last name is Irwin, and this is my nephew. So I'm asking questions that I'm pretty sure I know the answers of already, but it's for you and my co-host here, my guest co-host, Randall. So Randall, I think I should invite you into the mix too, because you might want to be engaged with answering questions or asking questions of Devin. So Randall, could you please, for those people who don't listen to the afternoon show but can be up in the evening to listen to Race Talks, could you share a little bit about yourself too?
Well, I'm pretty sure that everybody already knows me and listens to our program. But for those few,
or they better. Right,
but for those few who don't, my name is Randall Martin. I'm a radio show host here, and I produce a lot of media and television type programs. And you know, my passion is doing programming that empowers communities of color. And so that's why your program is so important and so vital. And as the program that I do with Kim Singletary, the other Kim. We do our afternoon radio show on Tuesdays from 4 to 6, and with Kim and Alan Scarrett. So, and we also do a gospel program on Sunday. So we're pretty busy, and I think the whole goal is, I think all of us here are talking about, you know, how do we support the community, support young people, and this very topic came up on this show when you were on my show last week. And so, and here we are talking about student athletes and, you know, the roles that the emerging roles that they can play, and how how sports have changed and how kids can benefit from those sports. So, can I ask your nephew, right? Is he your nephew?
He's my nephew.
Well, first, let's welcome you to the program. And can I ask you how you feel? You're on the ground doing programs with young people. How do you feel like this landscape has changed for young people with the name and image and likeness legislation that just came out to allow student athletes the ability to profit? How do you feel about these recent changes?
You know, I actually want him to answer that question. I'm gonna interrupt Devin, because although I like that question, I think that's a better question to be asked and answered a little bit later as we move into that.
You want to tease our audience?
It is a tease.
Okay, you want to create a cliffhanger.
They would have to listen a little longer, because I want to kind of move from what he was talking about with the young, what he does with the young people who are somewhat disadvantaged or at risk. And I wanted him to talk a little bit, because I know we don't have Devin maybe for the entire time. So I want to ask him right now about, because he mentioned that he also was in programs. So I want the parents to know out there how important it is for the youth to not be sitting inside their homes and just marinating either in front of the TV, you know, because it's too hot or it's too rainy. We had a lot of rain, but I want Devin to tell us a little bit about you growing up in this region, the Albany, Columbia County, Albany County region, and how important it was for you, and maybe a little bit about how you then prospered to go on to different, you know, educational institutions, a little bit like that. So people can see the importance of, you know, kicking your kid out the door and making sure that they can be successful in their studies and in life later.
Well, his question and your question, I'm kind of still go together.
Oh, good. That's still great.
It's kind of still tied together, because nowadays it's harder for your kids to get your kids outside of the house because of all the technology and the easy access they have to the outside world without even stepping outside.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry about that. And it's easier for kids to not actually step outside and engage in any activities with their computers or their phones or their tablets in their hands. We put kids in a position where they don't need those tablets or phones or computers anymore, where they actually enjoy what they're doing and they're learning in the process. Back in the day, we didn't have all this immediate access to the outside world, so it was more fun, or it was you kind of got motivated to go outside to actually do things. So now we just got to find ways to try to get kids motivated and stuff like that. Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say.
Do you find there's a difference between the amount of motivation you have to give a child? I remember with you, you just didn't want to be walking, or, you know, it's like there's a lot of reasons for not going out. How do you address the reasons? Because, you know, being someone who is able to see the world, how do you get students or young people to want to take, you know, want to go to these places? How do you get them motivated?
Well, with us, we host an NBA basketball camp every year. And that's a little motivation right there. You put NBA in front of it, kids get motivated. They like to see the stars and stuff like that. But we don't just have an NBA basketball camp. We actually, it's like a learning basketball camp. We teach them stem cell research. We teach them how to take care of their bodies and stuff like that. But kids don't, you don't realize that while you're there because you're so stuck on the NBA player or just being at that basketball camp. As he was saying, like, even now, I think the motivation that's going to get kids going is the fact that you could possibly get paid from your name now. And that you could possibly make money off of it, and that your name can be somewhere on a computer or on a tablet or on a wall somewhere. And I think that's going to be like the motivation now for kids. I don't think necessarily it's going to be for school anymore. I think this generation is money driven.
I agree. When I was a kid, I remember, like, I played football, and I would much rather play than watch it on, you know, and I don't know if it was the same for you, but I'd much rather participate, do the sport. I wasn't as much as an avid sport watcher as I was, you know, doing sports. I wonder if some of that thoughts or how, I wonder if you guys were like that when you guys were young, and if some of that can be infused into the young kids. Because, you know, as much as you can use PlayStation and hear the music and the graphics and all these other types of softwares, it is still more fun to play. There's nothing like, you know, catching a, you know, a football, you know, or making a touchdown, or, you know, doing one of the heroic plays. There's nothing that beats that feeling, I think, virtually. So it's interesting that kids are opting out of the actual experience in lieu of watching a simulated experience, which is not the full experience to me.
Well,
before you say something, Devin, can I just add something to it? Because, Devin, you have a brother, Tevin Irwin, who is also a basketball player. He didn't reach the heights you did in basketball, but he definitely was a player. And he actually plays sports, basketball, in that way. And he gets paid for it. So one could say now he's a professional online basketball player.
Interesting.
So with that knowledge, can you add to what Randall just said and, you know, bring in what Tevin does?
Well, yeah. With today's games, I mean, with today's logic, I should say, or behind everything, I don't think. Hold on one second.
Well, I wonder as he's explaining that, I wonder, like, you know, again, with, I know the controllers with all the haptic electronics, which give you a little vibration, you know, at specific times that kind of makes it feel real. I mean, exactly. But it is not. I think that when you actually sink a shot of playing basketball or catch a football or run a football in for a touchdown, I think maybe I'm old school. I just think that feeling cannot be replicated with a machine.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm back. Yes, that feeling is. I mean, that right there is, that's everything. Filling the court, catching the pass, making the shot, dunking, you know, that's everything. But I think it all ties in again today to the social networking. I think kids are afraid sometimes of failing. And I think people can see that all the time. I think that is very accessible for people to see your results. I think kids are afraid of that. I think it's easier to just build a character and play online and stay in the house and not worry about someone criticizing you.
Wow.
Or how good you, or how good you have to be.
Yeah, I never thought of that. I mean, you know, just the old day, you went out and you tried your best, and you know, you did what you you did what you had to do. And I played football on the street, you know, so where we hit parked cars, and as I did, and did a lot of things, fire hydrants, you know. And this is in New York City, and yeah, I mean, sometimes you look bad, you know, and you make mistakes, and you know, it's not always heroic or looks good. But I think there was a visceral response. And I often thought on my street in Queens, as I played football, that I wouldn't have felt better, even if I was on a polished AstroTurf course, you know, a football field. When I caught a football pass in between the two telephone poles that we had, the feeling that I got, the excitement that I got, was just elation. And it wouldn't have been better if I was in any other place. So I can't imagine. And I would hate to think that young people are not participating because they have this fear of failure.
Well, I want to talk a little bit more in depth about what this show is about, Race Talks.
Right.
And the ethnic dynamics, if that comes to play at all, because Devin, you are of a different generation than Randall, and he's already mentioned, you know, how differently one lives their life as a young person on the block. You know, it used to be, you know, you're playing kickball, you're playing football, you're hitting cars, and now people are sitting in their homes, in their bedrooms, and they're playing online. I mean, like Tevin, it was nearly impossible to get him to let go of the I don't even know, a joystick?
The controller.
He would literally go to sleep with that joystick in his hand, and one would say, well, he can't make any money doing it, but now he can. So with what Devin is saying is that, you know, the money's there, the instant gratification is there, and so it is, you know, very much a possibility that this is just what, you know, the new young people are going to do.
But is it good for you, though?
But wait, let me just put the point that I wanted to say is, so with that being said, there was a time, especially when you were younger, Randall, when you looked at the basketball court on TV and you saw a lot of players with a lighter skin tone, right? They were more white players, or definitely.
No, I'm not
back
that old.
On the back office people, majority white. So, well, I mean, maybe not in the 50s, but certainly with Oscar, you know. And now I wanted to know from your perspective, Devin, is that, do you see anything differently because of the ethnic diversity, well, the lack of ethnic, so much ethnic diversity within sports? And you can be specific about basketball if you'd like.
Well,
like the, well, in the inner city, part well, of it.
In, well, in the inner city, you're always going to get that's just because that's just the way we're built. I mean, the country itself. And in the cities, you're probably going to get more black kids on the team just because of that's just the way the cities are built. But overall, the game itself and with all sports actually is very diverse. Even hockey, there's multiple NHL, I'm talking about professional black players now. It's not just all white people. In the MLB, the All-Star game just passed. And every single song was a Spanish Latino song. Not one song was an African American or a white country song or anything like that. It was all Latino songs.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
Right.
And they said the stars of the MLB, not one of them are black, not one of them African American, not one of them are Caucasian. They're all Dominican Republic or Spanish. You know, so. And this is baseball.
Right.
This is baseball. So sports are all over now. It's not just it's not with just a specific gender or just a specific race anymore.
Well, and I'm asking you that question for that specific reason. So thanks for enlightening us and highlighting that.
you know, the difference in those sports. But the fact that we can note it, right, that means it's still important because, you know, because we do notice, right? So it's like when we don't notice, we know racism is over and we can all sing kumbaya. But because we're still recognizing these differences and what was and what is currently, and I like the
right. Because there are, like, right, but you are completely right, because there are still some strong differences. Like, in the NFL, per se, they don't have, like, two black coaches out of 30 teams. And the majority of the NFL, all their players are, like, 80% black.
Yes.
How you have 80% black players and you have 1% black coaches? Like, it makes no sense. You know, so, like, so there is still it's still just a disconnect there.
And you can see it larger. And one would say it could be the case. That's what we're looking at when we say systemic and institutionalized, because it's still like in movies where you can have more black people in movies. Oscar So Black was talking about how, you know, even with more movies showcasing black actors, you still have the people behind the scenes, the directors, the producers, you know, the owners of the different companies, still the production companies, they're still predominantly white. So it's a transfer of either power or money that comes along with those institutions haven't really happened. And we see it in education, and we've been talking about that in education too, Randall, right? Where we have a majority, and I think we mentioned it on your show last week or earlier this week, where there's a majority of young people in Columbia County who, at Hudson City School District, who are of color, and yet we still, and maybe for generations to come even, may see, you know, that disconnect with the amount of teachers or other types of representatives in the faculty and office staff.
Well, maybe it's like the first wave. I mean, because, you know, like you said, the infrastructure that this country was built on was built in a certain way, and it had the authority or the infrastructure of whatever that organization is, whether it be the NFL or whether it be the Congress or whether it be our local government or school systems. That whole infrastructure was formerly completely white and male, then white and white and white and female, and now you get this on the public side, the public facing side, you get some more representation of the, you know, of the workers or the participants can be mainly people of color, but administratively and in terms of the control and in terms of how the money and the power of whatever the institution is, that is still almost exclusively and 100% white controlled.
And I want to bring that point to Devin too. Hopefully you can stay on a little longer, Devin, because I think off air, I was telling you about this or talking to you about this, and you had a lot of information to say. But right now with ESPN, which is the premier sports channel, you know, they've given a lot of kudos, or they received a lot of kudos for, you know, supporting Black Lives Movement and to, you know, get Black faces on their networks. But recently there has been a pushback on ESPN, mainly from some white members, because of something I remember back in the 80s when Clinton was president, where they were saying, you know, we need to have more Black people being visible, more Black people given jobs, more Black people, you know, being able to be educated in different schools. So they gave us a step up. But some people were saying, well, if you get a step up with, you know, because of who you are, then it's actually because of the ethnicity you are, because you're African-American, then you're actually taking that space away from some other person who could have had it or who did have it. So what is the flack right now with ESPN was that they had in a contract one woman who was a white woman who was position to do a specific job at a premier event, league event, NBA event. And that was then offered to an African-American woman who took it. And that's when a lot of the flack happened. It's on YouTube. And because it's still, you know, simmering, I'd like to talk a little bit about it and try to get some understanding of how that can be seen in a positive light that we're speaking of this right now. So Devin, or I know that Randall, you've done your homework and research on it. So what have you guys got to say? You can be specific with the names. I just want to bring it out, the general conversation point.
Well,
I think it was that situation is also stems down to everyone's personal space or privacy, you know. So the situation you're talking about is between Rachel Nichols from ESPN and Maria Taylor, also from ESPN. Maria Taylor is a black co-host for NBA Countdown. She's been the co-host all year, actually, for NBA Countdown. Rachel Nichols hosts an NBA show every single day on ESPN. She just talks basketball. She talks NBA. Rachel Nichols wanted to get the NBA Finals gig, but Maria Taylor got it. So Rachel Nichols had a private phone call with someone, and it got leaked.
Now, let's just be clear. Rachel Nichols is a white woman who has a really good show on ESPN, so she was well within her rights to expect to have this position.
Correct. Like, yes. Like, if anyone's going to get the job, it should definitely be Rachel Nichols. Correct.
But also, you say it was a private phone call, but I think what happened, if I am recounting it properly, is that she was still live on mic. It wasn't like they just got her private phone call. Like she made a phone call, but her mic was still hot to the control truck. So the control room still had or heard this audio that took place. And then later, because then that sort of made it common knowledge. And I think it's not unusual that people gripe about things that happen in the workplace. But I think it underscores an issue of what happens when the power dynamics change. When you ask for equity, and when you from being on the court or being on one side to full equity, full participation in an organization, there's going to be pushback. And that's what happened. She pushed back. And basically what she said was, I don't mind if that lady gets an opportunity. I just don't want it to come at my expense. But when you're
right,
in
right,
a...
Right, she was... that's the thing. I think, I mean, like I was saying to my Aunt Kim, yes, she is my aunt.
he was going to say Auntie Kim, but he realized where we were.
Right. I was saying to my aunt yesterday, what was I saying, Auntie Kim?
You were providing the perspective. Okay, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Rachel Nichols is not in any way racist at all, you know, and people can literally take what you say and then turn it to something that is not. And Rachel definitely, I know, I mean, I don't know for a fact because I don't know Rachel myself, but I mean, from me watching her and my experience with her for, I want to say 10 years now, there's nothing wrong with her and black people at all. I just felt like she should have gotten that job. And she was just speaking out loud saying that maybe Maria Taylor got the job because of who she is. You know,
yeah, but that happened, and Kim, you mentioned in another show, you know, I don't know if that was a quote-unquote, as we used to say, the affirmative action hire, or because the network thought it was good for their brand to hire.
I think more for the brand. She was already hired, like Devin said. She's already doing her show.
Right.
But what I understand is that ESPN was getting pounded because of the Black Lives Matter movement, was saying, how is this a league predominantly African-American right now on the floor, and yet you have white people on the floor interviewing? So why don't we have any diversity in the arena?
Right. In every part, but I think the, for me, the larger picture is, let's say if you have 100 people that are employed doing stuff, and you say, well, wait a minute, this is not fair, this does not represent society, it doesn't represent the sport as fully. So then you start to change out some of those people. You're going to have those pushbacks because those jobs are already allocated. So yes. Let's say if you say, okay, we're gonna make it 35% in line with the proportions of whatever the sport is. Well, that in theory, that's 35 people that have to go from that thing, and 35 new people, they're going to get a chance. Now, those 35, and it might not be racistly, the system was racist to begin with. So when you start to correct the system.
Well, the system is in America, so there you go.
Right, but when you start to correct those disparities, some people are going to get displaced. But, you know, I think America just has to accept that because we have 400 years of displacement, of abuse, of stealing of any sort of resources that black people can really accomplish generationally, for the most part, except for some exceptions, that has happened to enrich America. So when you start to redistribute that system, when you start to look at that system and say, this is what's fair and equitable, yeah, there are gonna be people that are gonna complain. But it's part of the process.
I want to introduce terms because on this show, I'd like to, you know, try to communicate with the audience terms that may be relevant in their lives that they hear and to get some perspective of. So in this conversation, and we might have to move on to the next conversation too, but I want to look at the term race card. Race card and white privilege. So from what I'm hearing, the fact that some people who may be in disagreement with the fact that one person, no matter what their complexion or ethnicity or cultural background is, shouldn't be displaced for another person. But one would consider, so that would probably be something we can all agree with. But we have something like you were mentioning or happening on Randall, white privilege. We all have some type of privilege, right? We have some privilege about, we were born into a wealthy family. We might have a privilege where we live on a block, you know, certain place where we were born. So there's always, you know, being an American who was born in America versus an immigrant, there's privileges that we have for lots of different reasons. So would this, in your mind, be considered something that she said, being that she has white privilege, where, you know, this, she's also a woman. So I want to say, you know, there's totally, like you were mentioning before, male privilege too. But what would you say about that term white privilege being allocated here to the discussion with these two women?
Well, I think if you look at it, like historically, you can say, because all of those positions many years ago, because out of no fault, let's say, people of color were denied, they weren't able to get within those systems. Those systems were occupied by the descendants of the European settlers, right? So in that system, those people are going to already have that experience and they're going to already be in place. So when you now then come on the scene and you want to do whatever you want to do and we want equity and justice, that may require either an expansion of the system, which would then say, well, we're going to expand the system, but we're going to do it in an equitable manner in order to achieve these results, or we're going to move some people out. And so you do have to have a bit of a reverse white privilege, if you will, or a black privilege, because black people were underprivileged forcibly in this country for 400 years. So you've got to have some redress to that. So if that means that going forward, certain positions have to be tailored to create equity, yeah, there might be some people that may be inconvenienced, but for the most part, the way that the country is built, it's not like somebody's going to lose an opportunity that they can't get in another place. But there have been all these doors that we've been shut out of historically that have prevented us from fully participating, you know, in this American experiment, if you will, but there's been no redress to say, oh, well, we're sorry, or we're going to do this to make you whole. And this is that moves into the reparations thing, but I think it's not just...
Okay, we're not going to reparations.
No, I'm just saying, but it's the logical thing. Well, how do you make it right? How do you make the situation balance out?
So I want to bring up, thank you for that, Randall, and I agree. Devin, we have, I'm going to talk about the Spelling Bee Champ, Scripps 2021 Spelling Bee Champ, Zyla Avant-Garde, who's also a basketball, she's something like a basketball phenom too, and the way she can actually keep like five balls going at the same time, basketballs going at the same time. I don't think
she actually holds Guinness World Records.
Oh, well, see, we're going to talk more about that.
She does? Wow.
Wait, we're going to bring up that. But before we go, see, there's another plug, but before we go there, though, what are your final thoughts on the ESPN thing? Do you think that if you, right now, if you can play the race card and you're black, hey, so, you know, that evens the playing field out? Or what are your thoughts about that term in this situation?
Well, I think in any situation,
Let me ask you a different question.
With ESPN, they tend to go to what their fans like. You know, that's what ESPN, I mean, that's how ESPN moves. That's how a lot of the networks are actually starting to move towards. They're starting to move towards what the viewers like, you know, because you don't just watch on your TV anymore. You're not just sitting at home and your TV's going all day.
Yes.
You know,
you have YouTube and you have Hulu. And
right. You have to grab viewers. You have to grab viewers all sorts of ways now. So you have to start to learn, listen to your viewers. You know, they have input now.
So are you saying that the audience? So are you saying that the audience is driving equality? The public is demanding it, and these networks are responding.
Yeah, again, like as soon as I started off this whole thing, what I say, social networking, the internet, your tablets, your phones, your computers, all the information is there, you know, and if there's bad information there, people are going to see that also, you know, so, and the people tend to, it works both ways, though, because people gravitate towards bad news, but people also fall away from it, too.
Right, because it can get old and stale very quickly, also. You do actually drive away from the train wreck, right? You don't want to stay there throughout the entirety of it. So let's move on to this basketball phenom. She's been on Jimmy Kimmel Live. She's been everywhere. You seem to know a lot more about the basketball and spelling phenom. So tell us what you know about this young lady. And wouldn't she have been a great product? You know, we're looking at STEM in organizations now, clearly, and... which is science, technology,
engineering,
math, and now
arts.
We added art to it, the A in art theme. So we certainly would look to this young lady and say, you know, she's getting it right. She's doing it right. So what do you know about her, Devin?
Actually, I know absolutely nothing about her.
I did.
Well, you know way much more about her than I do. I'm an ESPN fan myself, and like I said, I watch it even when I'm not home. And she was on my headlines for like 3 days in a row. Right. She's the first African American to ever win the Spelling Bee. First of all, let's put that out.
Right.
She's the first black girl to ever win it.
Mariah, which is I don't even know how to pronounce that. I don't even know what it means.
She's the first black person to ever win the Spelling Bee. First black person, not first black girl. She's the first African American to ever win that Spelling Bee. The first one ever.
And I like the way you said that, because it's unusual sometimes for a woman of color to be the first over the male of color.
Right. You know, but it's not necessarily that she's a female. It's just it's in general, her race in general has never won that. That's an accomplishment in itself. And then come to find out, this chick is traveling the country, and she has other talents, you know?
Again, very talented. I said five balls. It says that she was asked to dribble six balls. So she can actually dribble six balls.
She was dribbling basketballs with blindfolded.
Blindfolded?
Blindfolded. Wow. Dribbling like four or five basketballs blindfolded. So this girl is incredible.
She holds
Guinness World Records. I don't know for what, but it's definitely for something great, because she's phenomenal.
Yeah, it's for that. That's what it said.
Well, and she's only gonna get better. She's only gonna prosper. She's only gonna grow. She has a bright future ahead of her.
Well, I want to throw this back to you, Devin, about the conversation about the importance of student athletes, because, like you said, she's a remarkable person, both academically and scholastically, and I think that we overlook the development of this whole student athlete model, where you have just sort of body, soul, and mind, and excellence all being sort of prepped into them. How important is that in the work that you do with young people, and how do you try to get the best out of them? Because you mentioned that your program also has a STEM model, STEAM model. So how do you do it?
Well, that's what I'm going to say too. She must have an amazing support group, a background, her parents, you know, because I mean, you can't do anything by yourself, you know, and it's someone driving her and motivating her to be that great, you know. We should just call her parents and ask them what did they do.
Well, Deb, if I could say a little bit about what they did. I remember you not wanting to get up to go to school because it was cold and you didn't want to, you know, have to wait at the bus stop. So I think that's what you're saying. You know, parents have to be part of it. I'm putting them on blast, but we know we all felt like that as a kid. I didn't want to do it. I remember my mother walking me each block to go, you know, making sure I go to school too. And, you know, and I turned out pretty well. So it does take a village. I'm glad you said that. I just want to bring up the fact, since I am an English teacher, Maria is defined as a genus of tropical Asiatic and Australian trees. And it's spelled M-U-R-R-A-Y-A. Which is why I didn't know it, because it's not something that an English teacher specifically would know. It looks more like science.
Yeah, but how do we get more kids in this track of where they can celebrate all their various skills? I mean, because you know, I went to Brooklyn Tech, and I played football, but I was in an engineering. I followed an engineering track. You know, I boxed. You know, so I've always been a person that I think try to embody both, you know, high technical knowledge and academics, as well as, you know, good health and physicality. So I think that that's something that we should be pushing all our young people to do, because you mentioned in the beginning that, you know, there's a lot of kids that they're couch surfing and I don't mean like sleeping in different places. I mean couch surfing where they're just moving from one couch to another, playing games and not really engaged in outside sports, and for various reasons, and not really participating. Many of them, the kids, has led to childhood obesity. Maybe a lot of these kids are not eating properly. And it's all, it is all sort of a composite picture that works together. How do we get kids motivated to now be excellent in all these different fields at the same time?
Well, I don't know if Devin is the guru in all of that, but can you tell us one or two things, Devin, that you guys, I think you mentioned some of the things you did, but is there any way of qualifying whether parents are involved in your organization, or, you know, who can support it to help support the children so that they can be motivated to get up and go?
Now I think it's the kids themselves and each other. You know, because I think it's all about competition now and competing with everything. You know, if you're not, I mean, if you're not the best dressed, you're the best game player. If you're not the best game player, you're the best basketball player, or you can draw the best, or you spell the best now. You know, they're all driving. I think everybody's motivation is always, I think that it's like not, I don't know how to say it. I kind of want to say self-motivation, but it's like the next person next to you. You know what I'm saying? Like the person that's next to you is motivating you to do better nowadays, you know? Or you're just literally looking, picking up your phone and seeing this girl dribble 5 basketballs, and now you're like, damn, I got to, excuse my language, I got to try to do that, you know?
Okay, Devin, I like what you just said, and I wanted to mention some of the athletes who would be attending the summer games. Thankfully, we see Simone Biles coming back after, I want to say, 6 world championships. I don't know if that's actually
That little girl's a cheater.
She's not a little girl. She's a woman. She's in her 20s.
That little woman is a cheater. no one can catch her. She's literally like a robot.
She's definitely shorter than you, so I guess you can say little.
She's like a quarter of my height, actually. Go ahead.
Possibly. But what you were talking about with motivating each other, because she is one of the oldest now gymnasts, and she's definitely the oldest gymnast on the American team. And the fact that the other gymnast that qualified, I think she qualified 3rd, on the Olympic team this year. She credits Simone Biles with keeping her wanting to be in sports, in gymnastics.
Motivated.
Yeah, she just told the other gymnasts, come and train with me. Uh-huh. You know, forget it. Come and train with me. So I think what I'd like to do to wrap this up with, and certainly I like to be positive about race and ethnicity, but, each one teaches one. And if we can support people who not only look like us, but who also don't look like us, right? So one of the things that you mentioned, Devin, was that, you know, some sports have very little African-American or even white people who are the most honored, having the honors as being the best. And in sports right now, a Japanese person, so he's not even Japanese-American, right? He's straight up from Japan, and he hasn't naturalized to be a U.S. citizen. So he's actually now being seen as one of the greatest because of his ability to hit home runs and throw, and
he pitches also. I touched on that earlier. And the MLB, Major League Baseball, that's professional baseball, if people don't know. the face of baseball is not the stereotypical white guy anymore. It's a Japan face or a Dominican Republican face. The guy you talk about is Shohei Ohtani. He's actually pretty good. He hits very well. He doesn't hit too much, but when he does, he hits very well. He's like one of the leaders in the home runs, and he pitches very well. He pitches also. Last weekend, he was actually in the home run derby, and he played in the All-Star game and pitched, and he hit. And that's the first time for anyone to ever do that in the game. And he's Japanese-born, like you said.
Well, but you know what occurs to me, though, is that, you know, a lot of times these professional athletes, whether it be in gymnastics or like this gentleman, they are exceptional people. They are people that are, you know, I mean, certainly you can aspire to that, but they, you know, these are 1 in a million or several million people who have the combination of skills and talent and discipline to achieve that. I don't know that necessarily when you talk to young people, and as you say, people, they kind of self-inspire the people. I don't know if that's always you know, the optimal model to look at, because these people are, by their very nature, exceptional people. They're not the ordinary kid. So if your motivation is to be extraordinary, like on that level, aren't a lot of kids maybe setting themselves up for failure? Because most people are not going to be ever on that level. But well, you can be exceptional and good and marketable and have a great life and not be this, you know, this incredible, phenomenal player or athlete.
But I think we all need to know that we can't be incredible, phenomenal in being us.
Right.
And I, for me, that's what these people model. You know, I look at them and I see myself. You know, I see myself as being, in whatever I do, exceptional. And some, you know, and I think that's the crux of everything, you know, with race and ethnicity and identity, is when you see yourself as other, but as other, not as an exceptional. I think personally, we should definitely look at these people who can do these exceptional things no matter what, and then look to see what's exceptional in us.
Yes.
There's a lot of things that we don't promote on air or on TV or in our own homes, you know. But that doesn't mean that anyone is less exceptional. I mean, how do you put together somebody's Christmas tree bike, you know, a bike for Christmas without looking at the instructions? You know, I always marvel at people who can do those things.
Right.
What you're saying is for,
what you're saying is perfect. There's many ways to be exceptional. You don't have to be, you know, this genius or star.
That's what I'm saying.
Exactly.
But the fact that we are breathing on this planet and we're interacting, hopefully, in the best and positive way, that can be exceptional.
Well, everybody can make a difference and everybody can make their world better. And like I said, that's exceptional. Now, we only have, since I'm keeping the time clock today, for you, we have a minute and a half. So, Kimberly?
Oh, well, thank you, Randall. Thank you, Matthew Martin, everyone. Thank you for being on the clock. And Devin Irwin, my nephew, thank you so much for being participating and waking
up.
Oh,
man, we're done. Oh, no.
Yeah, we went quick.
You know, we got to leave them wanting more. This time, we left wanting more. Okay, thank you, audience. See me next month, the third Tuesday of the month at 7 o'clock. Have a great July.
Take care.
Talk today with Jill Scott, and I love this song because we're living our life like it's golden, right? Like we're exceptional, like we're going to be on the medal stand at the Olympics.
Next, we hear from Art Tatum and his song, Soft Wind.